At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 76 of the Knowing Wheel podcast. Yes, of course, as always, we are joined by Jamie183. How are we doing, mate?
I'm good. I'm not used to the lack of F1 after we've been treated to 3 in a row and Now it's 3 weeks off. But here we are. We're here to record a podcast anyway.
We certainly are today, and this one is probably going to be one for more of our visual viewers of the show, so we apologise in advance that you probably have to look at our ugly mugs. I think everyone is going to turn off the show right now, but yeah, we had a 4-week summer break, 3 action-packed weeks of F1, and then they decided we're just getting another summer break again, which is pretty dead, but that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. But of course, this week, then, it kind of meant because F1 news has been pretty flat, you know, even the Formula One website is on a slow news day when they talk about how Charles Leclerc could still be world champion in 2022. We decided we'd take a step back into the past, didn't we, Jamie?
Indeed. We've got a few little news bits to cover before then, have we not?
Have we?
Well, there's a bit of development in the silly season. Rumour mill.
Not
massively.
It's not news. It's just speculation, isn't
it? The Colton Hurt of it is news. We'll go over that.
We'll call it news.
They can't jam the super license. No more Colton Hurt for 2023.
Unless he does like Indian F4 or something.
Yeah, he does the Joe strategy and goes to GP3 Asia and beats up a load of 16-year-olds. That was off tangent already. So he won't be going to AlphaTauri next season. Gasly still is probably the favourite to go to Alpine to partner Ocon. It's uncertain future for Mick Schumacher still. Not sure who's getting AlphaTauri. De Vries seems to be the logical option at the minute, but I want to throw Liam Lawson back in. if he dominates Abu Dhabi in like 2 months, then you never know. Although De Vries definitely will have the seat by then, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what do you do with Liam Lawson? He can't surely do another year of F2, can he?
He won't do it. I don't think he'll do F2. It's only his second year, actually, this year.
Is it? I thought it was his third.
No, he was a rookie last year. So, potentially.
I suppose he could do Super Formula for a year.
I don't really think he'll graduate to F1. Unless they suddenly get a third team at Red Bull family. It's a shame. But Monza was just such bad luck for him. But this is not about Liam Lawson. Although, that's a smooth segue onto what our topic is about.
It is. It is a very, very smooth segue there. I mean, you haven't actually...
I haven't. I thought you were going to carry
other
on.
Other AlphaTauri options, but... Yeah, we'll talk, I think, quickly. Do we jump into your butterly smooth segue that now I've butchered?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. So we thought today, you know, something a little bit different. Obviously, Formula One, there's, like we said, not really a lot of news going on, hence why we managed to get it covered in about 2 minutes. So we thought we'd look back into the past, and we had a notes page set down about a year ago on the show, back when it was still, you know, we were sort of in the early 20 episodes, Jamie still didn't know how to use his mic properly, you know, all those good things. And one of the ideas we had was past F2/GP2 champions, where are they now? And let's give them a rating. So we've got a tier list today. You can see we've obviously got, everyone knows how a tier list works. We've got different gravy, championship threat, potential race winner, decent midfielder, and backmarker. And we have got every Formula 2/GP2 champion of the modern era. plus Kamui Kobayashi, because the only tier list we could find also included GP2 Asia. Luckily, it was only Kamui that won GP2 Asia that didn't win GP2, so we're going to throw him into the mix as well, yeah, for whatever reason. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun to look back on. And of course, even topical, where Felipe Drugovich won the F2 championship just a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, if you want to check out this tier list, we'll link it down below. We didn't make it. Otherwise, Kobayashi, bless him, probably wouldn't have been here. But do we want to go in from most recent to oldest, or do we want to go oldest to most recent then, Jamie?
I reckon we start with Drugovich. Start with the new.
Should we start with Drugovich? Of course, confirmed as an Aston Martin reserve next year. Apparently declined a multi-year IndyCar deal to be the Aston Martin reserve driver.
That's not overly... I mean, I guess... I remember listening to a podcast, actually, with Alex Albon on it. And this is at the point, obviously, Albon did give up on his F1 dream temporarily to go to Formula E. And he said that decision was one of the hardest things as a young driver to, like, to close your doors to F1.
Except the dream is dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of get it for Drugovic to give it one more shot because, you know, if Alonso realises this isn't for him driving around at the back anymore, then Aston Martin could easily just go to Drugovic, especially if his performances are good as a test driver. Like, he could just step up into that seat. So I kind of understand why. And I guess the IndyCar door will kind of always be there. There's no point fresh off the back of a F2 championship just closing your doors to F1 completely, I don't think. So I understand that. But yeah, in terms of the ranking, I haven't actually... You haven't shared your screen to me, so I don't know what's going on.
Oh, I apologize. I forgot I disabled that again. Give me one second.
Yeah, it's obviously hard to judge because he's not actually raced in F1 yet, if he ever will. But yeah, I think he's definitely been okay. I wouldn't say he's top, but... Probably midfielder, do you think, if he got to F1?
Think I was looking at it, and I think decent midfielder is a fair assessment for Felipe Drugovich. Of course, F2 this year has been a combination of, don't get me wrong, he's been the best driver there, but the way he's been able to dominate has been fairly lucky. Of course, a dominant F2 campaign is either you've got a lot of drivers that are very competitive as well that you've just got the edge on, or you've got a few drivers that are pretty good that are either getting mecha-chromed or just Liam Lawson'd over
a
weekend.
Yeah, haven't had much consistency, any of his rivals at all. So by finishing top five in a race, which, yeah, is very credible, that's kind of how he's dominated. He's not won loads compared to Porsche in terms of race wins, but the consistency across the season has been very good.
Exactly. I think we wouldn't want to, you know, can I see them saying, and Felipe Drugovich comes out the final corner to win the X, Y, and Z Grand Prix? I'm not convinced just yet, especially if you're only an Aston Martin reserve driver. Mm-hmm. Speaking then, heading on to someone that did spend a lot of time winning in pretty much any car he's been given, finally, of course, going to get a gig in 2023, it is Oscar Piastri, and this one I am really hyped for.
Yeah, I think that lineup next year, Norris and Piastri, is, yeah, got the potential to be one of the best on the grid. We know Norris is probably top six on the grid, I would say, already. Piastri, yes, has had a better junior career than Norris did, although he's been slightly older, yep, through his junior career.
It is often forgot, isn't it? You know, people talk about how George Russell dominated Formula 2 even. And you go, but Lando was nearly three years younger, wasn't he? Like, yeah. Lando Norris could hang.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, Piastri is going to be ridiculously good when he's got settled in F1, I think. Yeah, obviously dominated F2 last year.
F3 the year before,
F4 the year before that. So yeah.
Formula Renault the year before.
Was it Formula Renault? Sorry. But yeah, Formula Renault, had to sit on the sidelines, as quite a few actual GP2 champions and F2 champions have had to do. But hopefully it won't affect him too badly.
No, exactly. And I think Oscar Piastri, you know, it really is going to be one of those stories, of course, Alpine, the one that got away. I mean, Alpine now are talking about ditching their entire junior program, aren't they? And you're like, stop throwing your toys at your pram and learn not to hire the pensioners and the French constantly for 8-year deals. It's not that difficult, surely.
just to, back on his Alonso agenda. Here we go.
Well, the thing is, like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not trying to say that Alonso isn't a good driver. But why, when you've got such heavy investment in so many good young drivers, do you either, A, keep hiring a pensioner, or B, just set up a junior Formula One team? It's not that difficult. I imagine it is quite difficult.
It is very
but
difficult.
But, I mean, we've said this basically since this podcast began, haven't we? Yeah. Alpine need a junior team. Renault should have stayed as the main team, and they should have made Alpine as a secondary team in Formula One. Extra cars on the grid. They get more time to develop their power unit as well, because no one else wants to use the Renault E-Tech. Give us a junior team, Alpine, and stop messing us around.
Indeed. Yeah. Unfortunately, they've not got loads of exciting young drivers anymore. Unless you count Victor.
It's because they're all going. Yeah. Because they keep hiring Alonso, and then he just walks out anyway.
Yeah, but Piastri, back to him. Obviously, the where are you now is quite simple for him. He's on his way to F1. I don't want to put him in the top tier yet, knowing some of the drivers that we have coming up.
Yes.
But I think second tier is definitely...
championship threat, definitely.
Based on his junior career, he should definitely be very, very good.
I don't see a world in where Oscar Piastri never gets himself into a championship battle. It's just impossible.
Mm.
Speaking of someone then that probably won't get themselves in a Formula One championship battle, it is young Mick Schumacher, still, of course, up in the air where he could be going for 2023, if anywhere at all. I am honestly inclined to say he'll just stay at Haas next year, and it's going to be really anticlimactic.
I don't know if Haas are that keen on him, if he's not got the Ferrari Driver Academy backing. I would kind of like to see Robert Schwartzman get another go. I think that's a very sideways move, since they were teammates in F2 and were basically matching each other. And of course, Schumacher at this point has 2 years, well, basically 1 year, since 2021 Haas didn't really count, experience. But yeah, it's difficult to see. He probably will end up at Haas and it'll be really anticlimactic. But yeah, he's been okay in F1. I think a lot of his performances have been quite unfortunate, that they come in the races where you don't score points. But yeah, he's not really putting Magnussen into the shade, which for a young driver, that's... you should kind of be beating Magnussen, I think, but if you want to really make a mark in F1. But yeah.
Yeah, it is one of those things, isn't it, of course, because I think last year was impossible to tell how good Mick was. And it does make me wonder sometimes...
how bad Mazepin was.
Well, how bad Mazepin was, but you also think, of course, had they kept Mazepin and Schumacher for 2022, Haas would probably still be last overall.
Certainly no higher than ninth. I think they could have snuck
out of Williams. No higher than ninth, definitely. But the thing, you've got to remember how much information, of course, K-Mag, with all of experience, is able to give them when it comes to setting up a car that, of course, Mick and Nikita just couldn't do. And I don't think that would have improved much for 2022.
No, and they'd have been crashing into each other any chance they got to put a chance at points.
There's a fair chance that... imagine now for 1 second, K-Mag and Nikita Mazepin as teammates. That would have been carnage.
Well, luckily, Mazepin probably would have been like 3 seconds off the pace. But
yeah, about that, yeah. It really does make you wonder, doesn't it? You know, just how slow Mazepin is in comparison to top Formula One drivers.
Yeah.
But, Schumacher, he hasn't really kept up with K-Mag either for the most part. He's got better more recently.
His quali results have been okay, but... in the races, Magnussen tends to, at least match
just
him. But then Magnussen also just crashes into people for fun and then has to get... I swear he's had like 4 black and orange flags this year.
Yeah, but that's normally just been for like the wing hanging off and stuff like that.
But then that's self-inflicted,
Yeah, sometimes. But you don't like Kevin Magnussen. You've got a K-Mag agenda, remember?
No, it's true.
I think what's actually going on is K-Mag is trying to get other people to back out of moves and they don't. So K-Mag is not one for taking anything, is he, lying down?
No.
But Mick Schumacher, though, I think I'm honestly going to say decent midfielder, but better than Drugovic.
I think so as well.
I cannot see, and Mick Schumacher emulates his father and wins a Grand Prix, sadly. I know it hurts a lot of people for me to say that, but I just don't see it happening.
No, me neither.
Moving on, though, Jamie, to our 2019 Formula 2 champion, who now I would argue is probably the most hyped-up driver that hasn't yet got an F1 seat that I'm still not exactly convinced is the real deal.
I think it's massive overhyping, to be perfectly honest.
It was the perfect storm, the Italian
Grand
Prix.
It really was. The Williams was very decent at Monza. We kind of knew this. Albon seemed to know this from practice and pre-weekend. He was kind of hyping himself up. Of course, yeah, unfortunately for Albon, got appendicitis, which was really bad. I don't know if we covered it last week, but he's okay now.
We did discuss it, yeah. Collapsed lung.
Yeah, pretty terrible stuff. But yeah, Nyck de Vries, to come into that team at that race against that teammate, you can't really ask for much more to make a first impression.
No.
So yeah, he did all it could be expected of him, but I would back any respectable driver to have come in and done similar, to be honest.
Yeah. And I mean, like we said, it was kind of that perfect storm, wasn't it, of course, because that Williams, we've seen it quite often this year. It's not a bad qualifying car anyway. But of course, what Latifi said about it not being a race car is absolutely spot on. It's only designed to go very quickly down the straights at a track like Monza. And that means it won't be able to stick behind other cars through the corners. But of course, you're just banking on being ahead of those cars and then not being able to get past you down the straights. Which, to be fair, De Vries did do perfectly all weekend.
Yeah.
But we don't exactly class Albon as a championship threat or a potential race winner, I feel Albon could be. But I don't see Nyck de Vries being any better than Albon at all.
No, and he's 27.
And he's 27.
He's basically just the Dutch Giovinazzi.
Which is a big issue. He is. He's just Dutch Giovinazzi at the end of the day. And but, yeah. I always thought Giovinazzi was pretty mediocre.
Yeah.
So I think we're saying decent midfield, though,
yeah.
I'm guessing.
He's respectable. He's not going to take the F1 world by storm. But he's not going to be like offensive to the grid.
Where do we put him then? Ahead of Mick, between Mick and Drugovich, or behind?
I think
Drugovich?
He goes ahead of both of them based on his F2 title was actually very decent.
Obviously, it was like his
fifth year or something.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think that's fair enough.
Better than Drugovich and Mick Schumacher. Okay, now we get into, I'd argue, more of Formula 2 / GP2's glory years,
golden era.
Until
you get
where
to
they really
Julian Palmer.
No, that's really when it peaked. It kind of fell off after that.
Yeah.
Let's go then. 2018 Formula 2 champion. It's our boy George Russell.
Indeed. And he's got to be top tier.
He's got to be different gravy material. Luckily, yeah. Of course, a lot of these is a lot less speculation now because sort of looking through pretty well all the next five all obviously got F1 gigs. But I mean, there's only two still on this list that didn't get an F1 gig. No, three, sorry, that didn't get a Formula 1 gig.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
George Russell, of course, that Formula 2 campaign was dominant. You know, we sort of hype up, you know, him, Albon and Lando all making it to Formula 1, but George was head and shoulders above the other two.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's different gravy material. He's proved that
rookie,
in Formula 1, hasn't
rookie
he already?
Season as well.
In his rookie year in F2. He's different gravy, isn't he, Jamie?
He's beaten Lewis Hamilton in his first season as teammate.
He is currently still ahead of Lewis Hamilton in equal cars, which there's only one other driver on this list I think can claim that, which we'll get to in quite a while.
Yes.
2017, though, we were actually talking as we were going through these pre-recording. I think this still, in my eyes, is the best Formula 2 campaign we've ever seen. It's Charlotte.
Yeah, he was top quality in F2. He was slightly helped by the fact it was a completely new formula, effectively, because 2017 was the new cars by Dallara, so everyone was basically a rookie. Obviously, when rookies come in now, you're up against drivers who have 1 or 2 years experience in those cars. This year,
or
he was up against,
if you're Roy Nassani.
Yeah, he was up against like Giotto, and I can't remember who else would have been back there at that point. People like Markelov. But they all were effectively rookies, despite having years in GP2, because it was a brand new car. So, yeah, I'm not trying to hate Leclerc. He did a very good job, and he was extremely young to be rinsing everyone at that point.
Yes.
Yeah, he will, hopefully for his sake, go on to great things in F1. I know that's a wild take.
I mean, he
take.
Already has, hasn't he? What do you mean go yeah. on to wild things in Formula 1? He is already an incredibly good driver. I mean, like we said, I think he was something mad, like he took 9 of 11 poles in his F2 yeah, season. Yeah. He just constantly was on pole with some... I mean, his Monaco qualifying lap where he hit the wall twice and still took pole by like yeah. 4/10 was absolutely incredible. We won't talk about anything else Leclerc's done at Monaco.
No.
Certainly, again, I think different gravy material.
Yeah, yeah, he's right up there.
On when it's going well for Leclerc, we might add. But better than... Oh, here we go. This is going to get controversial quickly. Is Charles Leclerc better than George Russell?
I would say no.
Good. I'm also the same though.
I mean, it's not British bias.
No.
I just think Russell is a safer pair of hands.
Russell is an all-rounder, better driver. Leclerc, I would argue, is quicker over... The thing is with Leclerc, and I know I've said this before, I genuinely believe Charles Leclerc might be one of the fastest one-lap drivers we've ever seen in Formula 1. For yeah. me, honestly, when you watch some of his laps, I see him right there with Senna and Lewis in terms of one lap pace.
Yeah, and the amount of
some
poles
of the laps
he
can do is phenomenal.
This early in his career, incredible. But yeah, I think if I was a team boss choosing a driver to lead my championship charge, I would rather go for George Russell.
yeah, helped of course by the fact that obviously, George has been a little bit lucky he's coming to Mercedes when there's not as much pressure because the car isn't that great. Mm. And obviously, Leclerc's being stuck at Ferrari now forever, which is basically a death wish.
That'll wear him down eventually.
That will. I mean, he'll retire by 2025, I reckon. I'm going to put up with Ferrari for that long. But yeah, I think those two are certainly, you know, we're going to see these two battling for championships over the next 10, 15 years. And they probably are two of the only young drivers on the grid that can hold a candle to Max Verstappen as well.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is going to be incredibly important for the future of the sport.
Yeah.
Speaking of someone that couldn't hold a... Oh, okay.
I wanted to interrupt the...
Okay. I was about to do a perfect segue now, but...
Unfortunately. This is the point, obviously, in history when GP2 became F2. It's now... I thought this... I mean, the quiz could go anywhere this week, but I decided to put it here because it's kind of in the middle. Breaks it up. On theme, on brand, as always, there have been 15 drivers to graduate from Formula 2 / GP2 into F1 and score a podium finish in Formula 1.
Oh, that makes
so
it
not,
a lot more difficult.
Obviously, the champions count. I'm going to give you a minute and a half
podiums.
Because there's 15.
Okay.
Some of them are on your screen, which will... Obviously
they
help.
Are, yep. Yes, massively.
Some of them won't be, which I'm sure will be interesting. But yeah, your time is going to start now.
Kobayashi, Rosberg, Hamilton, Timo Glock.
Oh, you're just going
not
through the
list. Not, of course, Hülkenberg. Romain Grosjean, Pierre Gasly, George Russell, Charles Leclerc, Lando Norris, Alex Albon, Kevin Magnussen.
Magnussen,
how many have I got
in F2?
Did he not?
No.
And he's still got a podium in F1 in his debut. How many more have I got?
There are six more, and you've got a minute. Six. I should have only given you a minute since like half of them were on your screen.
Six more GP2 drivers that got a podium that didn't win in Formula 2. Jarno Trulli?
No. He's been racing in F1 since the 90s.
Oh, yeah, he did, didn't he? I always thought him and Timo Glock were similar. Nick Heidfeld?
No, never did F2.
No.
Or GP2.
Trying to think of other drivers. Oh, I'm so bad at these, honestly.
Did you
Perez?
Say all the ones on your list?
Perez?
Oh, Perez did, yep.
Yeah, I said all the ones on the list.
Okay.
Pastor Maldonado?
So, yep.
Yeah. I might have forgot about
more.
Him originally. Four more. Think of other podium sitters. Daniel Ricciardo?
Never did F2 or GP2. No. Oh, you've got 5 seconds, have we?
What?
That went quickly.
Oh, I don't know.
Climb up.
I mean, what's that? 11 out of 15?
Yeah, not bad.
Okay.
Although, about going. 8 of them were given to you.
Yep, very true.
Did you say Lando Norris?
I did say Lando Norris.
Okay, you got 12 out of 15 then. I didn't.
Oh, okay. That's not so bad.
So you missed... These are quite hard, to be fair. You missed Vitaly Petrov.
Oh, yeah.
Nelson Piquet Jr.
Oh, yeah. Hockenheim 2008, wasn't it?
Yeah. And Heikki Kovalainen.
Oh, so I mean, I got all the more modern ones. That's fair.
Yeah,
enough.
That was quite hard. Those drivers, obviously, you know who they are, but they're not ones that spring to your mind when you think of.
Welcome to the world of winning, Heikki.
Yeah.
Now there's the exit. Get out. We never want to see you again.
I was actually, I can't remember what I was listening to or watching. I was listening to a podcast with Timo Glock on it, and they played a clip of Glock's first podium, like the commentary from his first podium, which was Hungary 2008.
Yes.
And even, is it, who was the old commentator for ITV? The one who screamed a lot.
James Allen,
yes. And he was like, hey, Kovalainen's first race win.
Grand Prix winner. Yeah.
And it's like, that will surely be the first of many for Heikki Kovalainen.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. Heikki Kovalainen, we're going way off topic here, but Heikki Kovalainen had such a bizarre career. Like, he literally came
he
in,
did. He
joined
was like,
Renault because Alonso
he skyrocketed
left,
to the top.
Got swapped with Alonso to McLaren, despite not doing much, and then spent 2 years at McLaren, and then ended up in a back
right,
car, and then was just gone. He got a podium later on in the year, but he had a pretty up and
weird
season.
It's such a weird rise and fall, because it all happened within, like, 3 years.
He basically did, like, a normal F1 driver's career, like a 15-year career inside 5 seasons. It was mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Heikki, yeah, we miss you. I wonder what Heikki's doing nowadays. He's not. He is not. Speaking of someone else that got promoted into a top Formula drive too quickly. You're going to research that quickly. I'm going to slander Pierre Gasly then for you for a minute. Where are we going to classify Pierre Gasly, Jamie? Of course, one GP2, sorry, now I've got to remember to call it. Then had to go to Super Formula, bottled that championship, because apparently blamed the wind.
Then
got, obviously, everyone forgets the bizarre call-up that, obviously, both he and Brendan Hartley got late on in 2017. Then, of course,
no,
came
Gasly
back
was
to 2018.
Called up.
I thought they also brought in Hartley for a couple of races.
Not at the same time. Hartley was because Sainz got pinched. Gasly was just because Kvyat was rubbish.
But they were like one weekend apart, weren't they, or something?
Yeah.
That was like the bizarre back end of 2017.
Yeah.
And then Kvyat came back and went and came back and went and all this, that and the other.
Yeah.
But Pierre Gasly, Jamie, I know you're going to hype him up a lot.
I mean, I think there's an obvious place for him to go. Since he has won a race in Formula One.
I think potential race winner is perfect for him, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm honest about my drivers. I try and rate them fairly. I think Gasly probably deserves a shot in his cop car again now that he's fully formed.
But not one with Red Bull stickers on it.
Not one with Red Bull or with Max Verstappen, because he would take 3 years to recover again. I think potential race winner. Obviously, he did win a race in Monza. Hopefully, there's more on the way. But it might. Hopefully, Alpine could give him a good car and he can absolutely rinse Ocon.
Would Gasly, he rinse Ocon?
It'd be close, I think. I'd back Gasly, but I think it'd be very close.
I would back Gasly to beat Ocon, to be fair, but still. Shall we move on then, Jamie? To probably one of the most hyped up F1 drivers, well, going into Formula 1 drivers of all time. Was it the most dominant F2 campaign?
It was.
GP2
yeah.
campaign, sorry. And he then it just all fell apart.
He won by 160 points. In
which is
F2,
insanity.
Yeah. When the likes of, so most drivers win by about 20 to 40 points. And Van Dorn won by 160.
To be fair, we probably ought to caveat that, shouldn't we, slightly. If I remember correctly, the GP2 2015 grid wasn't that good.
No. Second place was Alex Rossi. Then Sergei Sorokin, Rio Haryanto, Mitch Evans.
It's all F1 backmarkers and guys that didn't make it. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So Stoffel played GP2 in easy mode and then spent 2 years getting his behind handed to him by Fernando Alonso.
Yes, yeah. He did well against Jenson Button for one race. Or two races,
actually. That's because Button had penalties.
Nah, Bahrain.
Bahrain 16, no, that was really, wasn't it, where we were like, Stoffel's the real deal. Get him in an F1 car right now.
They literally kicked out Button a couple years early to get Van Dorn in.
I think Button was happy to call it a day, though.
I think he maybe would have done one more year. But then driving that McLaren in 2017, he probably glad he didn't.
Probably.
Yeah. Van Dorn had a lot of potential. It was very unfortunate to be up against Alonso in a car that you really couldn't do much with.
But, yeah, must also be added, did not crash at Singapore to help his teammate win a race. So he is better than Nelson Piquet.
That's true. Yeah. And he's also a world champion, if I'm not wrong. I don't watch Formula E.
He is a world champion, technically. So we're putting him in championship threat, are we?
Yeah, we didn't say which championship.
Yeah. I mean, Stoffel, isn't it? He's one of those weird ones, a bit like Nyck de Vries, where you wonder if he came back now what he would be able to do. But I can't say he's any better than Nyck de Vries.
I think midfielder is basically where he's for.
Where or right are we ranking him in midfielder?
Probably the best of those. I feel like his stint in F1, at least he had a proper teammate rather than Kevin Magnussen, so he's better than Schumacher.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Fair enough. Let's get on then to... Oh, I mean, it's pretty easy, isn't it? He's going straight up in different gravy.
Yeah, the best driver in history.
Best driver in Formula 1 history. It is, of course, Lord Julian Palmer. 2014 GP2 champion. We will never forget lap 27 of the 2017 Singapore Grand Prix. The greatest Formula 1 lap of all time. Thank you very much. Where we had Hamilton in the lead, 30 seconds clear of Palmer in P2. It was glorious. It made my day. I still remember it now, nearly, 5 years later.
Yeah, 5 years almost to the day, actually, since the...
It is probably pretty close.
...screwed himself over.
Yep.
Actually, I was going to slander Palmer for having a really bad competition, but actually isn't that bad in 2014 F2.
No, his Ford GP2 2014 grid was quite competitive, but... I'm going to caveat that by also mentioning I'm pretty certain he'd already been there for about 3 years at that point, hadn't he?
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I think Julian Palmer did have a lengthy Formula 2
campaign. Oh, he debuted
two,
in 2011.
Campaign. Yeah.
That was his fourth year. Oh, dear. Yes.
I mean, let's be fair.
Take it back for a second. Palmer wasn't great in F1. I think that's fair to say.
It hurts me to
lost,
admit, but 5 years
lost quite on, badly. Lost quite badly to Magnussen. 7-1 in the points in 2016. And then
but
lost
he did
even
score points
worse.
In Malaysia.
Lost even worse to Hülkenberg across only 1 year, or even not even a full year as teammates. He was so bad they replaced him mid-season after Japan. Yeah. I mean, yeah. To be kind to you, I want to put him a midfielder, but he really was just terrible.
I can't even argue against it when you look at the facts. He was a backmarker, wasn't he? But, we also add, probably has the best F1 analysis that they've got hired. He is fantastic with that side of things on F1 journalism.
Yeah, I don't watch much YouTube anymore. Especially not videos that this channel puts out. But he on F1, that's one of the videos every single time it's uploaded, I watch it. Julian Palmer's analysis. He is quality.
He is a quality analysis. Let's go on then to the real dark days of Formula 2. GP2. I'm going to keep saying Formula 2 accidentally. And it's really annoying me already. We kind of got into the years that are forgotten, haven't we? Where GP2 saw some drivers that never made it to Formula 1, some drivers that spent all their time in Formula 1 crashing out, and some drivers that never could get podiums.
Right.
Fabio Lima,
2013. 2009 was serious again.
No, I wouldn't say so. Let's not go
Fabio
too far
Lima.
Back, Jamie.
Shall we do some Where Are They Now stuff?
Let's do some Where Are They Now, because he's probably one of the ones we don't really know what he did.
And what he did was... very little after winning GP2. Yeah.
Okay. Tell me more.
So he won the GP2 championship 2013. He won 3 races across the season. And all he did since then was test drive for Manor in 2015. Did a practice session at Hungary. Competed in the World Endurance Championship in 2014, including Le Mans, 24 hours. And stood in for 2 rounds in the 2014-15 Formula E. Finished 32nd overall. And then he won something called the Ferrari Challenge Finale Mondiali Results. No, the results is just the next word on Wikipedia. He won whatever... Yes. So he didn't go on to much. And that is Fabio Lima for you.
Now, this was probably, wasn't it, one of... Because we can kind of understand, of course, everything else that was going on around Formula 1 at this point, why we did have a couple of drivers that won GP2 that didn't make it to Formula 1. This was, of course, in a time when you obviously still had 2 of the 3 Backmarker teams. Of course, HRT had already fallen off the face of the earth, and Manor and Caterham were just trying to get anyone with enough money in the bank to obviously get them on board. Fabio Lima, and I think we can probably bring Davide Valsecchi into this as well, were not bad drivers, but they weren't that much better than these drivers that had a lot of money behind them, but didn't have any money behind them, so no one was willing to pick them
up. Like, for those kind of teams, you're thinking like Max Chilton and Charles Peak were the 2 pay drivers that they had at that point between them. So why would you drop either of those for Fabio Lima when all they're going to do is drive around at the back anyway?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it was a rough time for GP2. The likes of Sam Bird, James Calado, Felipe Nasr actually came 4th in 2013. Marcus Ericsson was in there, Jolyon Palmer. Robin
Goat
Frins.
Himself.
Wow. That's a
Robin
name
Frins,
yeah. Yeah, it was not a lot of drivers that went on.
Fabio Lima could have been prime midfielder Formula E territory.
Yeah.
But apparently not.
Then,
of course, we move over.
Lucas Degrassi for 1 race.
He did. He certainly did. Then, of course, we move over to Davide Valsecchi, who, a pretty similar story, except for I think he has done a little bit more since then, hasn't he, Jamie? Including getting slandered by WTF1 Matt years ago, who then chickened out and deleted his tweet. May we never forget.
I've had a conversation with Davide Valsecchi. Very nice man.
Can you have a conversation with him?
Yeah. He's really, really passionate about everything. In real life as well.
About everything he talks about.
Yeah. Like, we were just talking about anything, and he was like, yeah. And that was a pretty good impression of Davide Valsecchi.
It was.
Yeah. So what's he gone on to do? Obviously, commentated quite a substantial amount.
He certainly
F2
has.
And CP2. I really like him as a commentator. he actually did very little racing after 2012. All he did, he test drove for Lotus in 2013. Didn't do any practice sessions, unfortunately, for him. Did a bit of GT series 2014 and 2016. And that was basically it. And he didn't get classified because he scored no points in GT series. So, yeah, not brilliant in terms of driving from Valsecchi, but he's a good commentator.
He is a very, very good commentator. So. And he did shake Jamie's hand, so that puts him at the worst of the Backmarkers. Right down here.
He's one of 2 drivers on this list that I have met. There we go.
He is one of 2 drivers. Actually, who have I met on this list? I don't think anyone. Looking at it.
Wow,
now.
There we go. Yeah, I'd put him above Lima, because I like him more than Fabio Lima. So.
Fair enough. And I mean, it's very, very difficult to judge with those 2, isn't it? Who would have been worse off. Then we move over to Formula 1's... Let's bring in all the crashy GP2 drivers. Romain Grosjean, I think the first driver on this list that won both GP2 and GP2 Asia. And Valsecchi did win GP2 Asia, did he? Fair enough. Didn't actually know that. Also, though, to be fair to Grosjean, it must be added, did have quite a long Formula 1 career. Quite a storied Formula 1 career as well.
Yes.
And on his day, back at Lotus, was incredibly good. It's a shame that day happened about twice in, about 150 Grand Prix that he did.
Yeah. Now, too, like, Grosjean, it's such a curious career because there was
such a story of what if.
There were such long spans of time where he was very fast and very respectable. But it's a problem. They were just interspersed with periods of time where he was just tragic.
There was a lot more time during those periods where he was awful.
So, like, at his time at Lotus, 2012, 2013. 2012, more so, was super inconsistent. I think he got three podiums, yes. Crashed out on the first lap an awful lot, obviously, culminating in a race ban for Spa 2012.
But then 2013... to get a race ban in F1.
2013, he was certainly second half of the season quality. First half, he still kept crashing a lot, while Raikkonen was just piling in podiums and being a championship threat. But second half, he was the only driver outside of Red Bull to even have a chance of winning races. And that's
There were a couple of races, wasn't it, where we talk about Sebastian Vettel being OP for those last nine races of 2013. Grosjean was sometimes his only threat. And a couple of times, Grosjean was a real threat that people forget about.
Japan. He made Red Bull work so hard for their 1-2 finish. Japan 2013. He took the lead on lap one. And then, led for like half the race. So, and Webber only got second place on the very last lap, I think it was. So, yeah. And USA as well, I believe it was. He literally started last with engine penalties, still came through for a podium. So
Grosjean was on his day. Brilliant.
He goes with the other Frenchman, in my opinion, potential race winner, because he very nearly. Grosjean was. He was so close to winning races. That's got to be potential. If we go back to 2013...
Are we honestly suggesting? Yeah, no. I suppose he probably is better than all those below him. I think that's fair. Not quite Pierre Gasly levels. But he is definitely better than those below him.
At Haas as well, he was very decent in 2016, 2017. And then it just all fell apart as soon as Haas got fairly respectable. And then, of course, it went out with a bang in Sakhir. So, yeah.
That's how you're choosing to frame that, are you?
Yeah. It's basically summed up his career, really.
Okay, Jamie, we'll let that one slide. Apparently,
yeah, we'll move on.
We will move on to basically another driver that pretty much had a similar story in F1, but just even more weird. It's Pastor Maldonado time, the people's hero, the Venezuelan goat. Bizarre career that was.
Oh, I don't understand. I don't think anyone, even he, probably doesn't understand Pastor Maldonado. He was just so hot-headed.
Pastor Maldonado is not someone you understand. He's like an essence or a fragrance.
No. He was just unbelievably fast on his day. But that happened. Sorry, you're lagging quite a lot. I'll give him twice. Singapore 2012. He was going to get a podium. And then retired.
And Valencia 2012 until he took out Hamilton.
Yeah. He was good until the 2012 Valencia.
Yeah. And I think this is the thing, isn't it, that's often forgot about that 2012 Williams. Because, I mean, there's still conspiracy to this day, isn't there, about that car that weekend. You know, Frank Williams' 70th birthday, 10 years since Williams, or nearly 10 years since Williams last won a race. Which is mad now, of course, that that's still Williams' last ever Formula One win.
Mm.
But that car was quick on its day, and apparently that was basically just in Spain. But Pastor Maldonado, again, you know, we can't really put him as a decent midfielder because not only was he a potential race winner, he was a Formula One race winner somehow. None of us to this day quite know how that happened.
Well, the FIA don't know either because they burned the evidence before they got a chance to prove him wrong.
Well, they did, they got back and burnt the factory down. But, I mean, what a bizarre time in Formula One.
Spent the second half of his career just crashing when the Lotus was terrible.
Grosjean kind of was able to still to tread water. Maldonado just kind of sank, didn't he, at that point?
Yeah, he did a bit of World Endurance Championship. He came third one year in 2018-19 with Dragon Speed. Entered Le Mans a couple of times. Never really amounted to much. And hasn't really done much racing since 2019 at all.
That funnily enough coincides with Venezuela just collapsing in on itself.
Yeah.
So that kind of all adds up. I don't think we can say he's better than Grosjean or Gasly, can we? I cannot believe we're living in a world where we're putting Stoffel van Dorn below Maldonado and Grosjean, but it is absolutely true. People just don't like to believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. Honest opinion only. Real knowledge, 100%. Right.
What I'm
going to
love is the next bit then, Jamie.
The real goat.
with the logic we're using today, you're going to be very upset very quickly.
No, because he is a potential race. Or he was. If you take it back 10 years, he's going in potential race winner. I do not care.
What? No. Jamie, you never got a podium. He's in with your Drugoviches and your Schumachers.
No,
shut up. And your Maldonados. I'm sorry. Nico Hülkenberg got into Formula 1, then got replaced by the superior Maldonado.
But he got replaced by money, is what happened.
Then spent years getting his ass handed to him by Sergio Perez.
Are you joking? I am not having this at all. No, Hülkenberg is going in potential race winner.
But he wasn't. And now he's out forever. When?
If Alonso didn't cry on the radio in 2012 Brazil, he would have won that race by about a minute.
What do you mean? Hülkenberg crashed himself out.
Alonso asked for a safety car because Hulk and Button were winning by a minute.
And then Hulk bottled it.
No, the driver getting lapped bottled it by staying on the dry line.
He's always meant to stay on the dry line in the wet.
Is that what happened? So are you saying that Lewis at Imola last year was okay then?
Yeah.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Yes, I am.
No,
look, Hamilton locked up, made the mistake. I'm willing to put him at the top of the midfielders, but he was
How could you say he was 30 laps from winning a race?
He's the epitome of a decent midfielder.
No, I'm not having this.
Antonio Giovinazzi led laps in Formula 1. We don't see me putting
Hulk
him in championship
led on merit,
threat.
Not because he hadn't pit yet.
I'm sorry, based on the metric we are using today, I'm more than happy to leave Hülkenberg at top of decent midfielder, but I'm not putting him in potential race winner when he lived up to nothing.
You got a pole position.
You're actually going to rage quit. He did get a pole position in changeable conditions.
Everyone was on dries. He just got it by over a second.
Right, okay. He's staying where he is.
Let us know what you think. I'm obviously Team Hulk. And Matt is just trying to wind me up.
I'm not trying to wind you up. Based on the criteria we've been using, he is not on the same level as Maldonado, Grosjean, and Gasly.
Grosjean never won a race.
Grosjean got plenty of podiums, though.
In the third best car.
Yeah.
Hulk never had the third best car. Or he did for one
Perez
race.
Still got podiums in those cars. Perez won a Grand Prix in the 2020 Racing Point.
Yeah, which was the second best car that was still
third
in the race
best.
At that point.
Well, yeah. But I'm sorry, Jamie. If Hülkenberg hadn't bottled so many podium chances, I would have put him as a potential race winner.
Anyway, he's still got a career. He's coming back to Haas. Announce Haas.
He's not coming back to Haas. You literally said half an hour ago how Mick Schumacher's going to get that seat.
Yeah, but I can still believe.
You can still believe in a
lot
of
things. He also won Le Mans, which is a more credible season than F1.
Oh, behave. You know nothing about Le Mans. Yeah, I hate it. You always slander Le Mans until we talk about the 2015 race. And then you're like, it's the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah, I do. That's
nice
correct.
OP Porsche and the only car with no reliability issues. Let's move on, Jamie. 2009 to our final lost driver of Formula 1. It's Giorgio Pantano. Now, please explain to me, because I have no idea what happened to this specimen.
Yeah. Well, first of all, he won F2 or GP2 when he was 30 years old. which is always a good start.
Oh, that's incredible. So he basically spent a year as a 30-year-old man beating up children.
In fact, he already had debuted in Formula 1 in 2004.
Oh!
For Jordan. Got a best finish.
Was that
in
a Grand Prix or just in...
No, he did a whole season, or most of a season.
Did he? I completely forgot about this.
Yeah, for the Jordan Ford in 2004. Finished 13th twice and retired a lot of times. And then a year later, made his debut in GP2. So he was in the first ever season of GP2 in 2005. And finished 6th, then finished 5th in 2006, then finished 3rd in 2007. And then won in his 4th attempt in 2008. Since then, he did a bit of IndyCar. A very small amount of IndyCar. He did 05 and then 11 and 12 as well. Raced for AC Milan, which I wasn't expecting. In the Super League, which I also wasn't expecting.
Oh, I remember that. That was bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then
that
he did
Super
one
League
season
was
of Blanc,
so scuffed.
Blancpain. Or however you say that word.
Blancpain GT3, yeah.
In 2014. And he's now 43.
Now, I think the real question is, surely, with a story career like that, where was the A1 GP race? Or the Formula E race?
Yeah, he never did, actually. He did some Auto GP, which I don't know what that is.
Yeah, fairly similar.
But yeah, nothing. He did Formula 3000, actually, before he debuted for Jordan.
But that was all GP2, wasn't it?
Against, actually, that's quite an okay grid. Although he was obviously 30 and did, that was his fourth year in it, GP2. He was up against the likes of Bruno Senna, Lucas Degrassi, Grosjean, Maldonado, Buemi and Petrov. And all of those made it to F1. Finishing second.
So what you're saying then is championship threat material, right?
maybe. Yeah, we don't know much about Pantano. And yeah, let's stick him in back marker. Probably.
You cannot win GP2 at 30 years old. I'm sorry.
No,
that should have been
the worst.
I'm a firm believer in there should be an age limit in GP2.
Probably, yes. And Roy Nassani should definitely be over it.
Roy Nassani is, yeah, however old Roy Nassani is, it's a day younger than him. Let's go back then, Jamie. I think the final four are all very, very interesting candidates, aren't they? Timo Glock.
The lovely Irish man called Tim.
Tim, yes.
Tim O'Glock.
And his team, O'Glock.
I really like Tim O'Glock. I don't know what about mediocre German drivers who never won a race. But I just like all of them. You know, Glock, Heidfeld, Hülkenberg, obviously. Yeah, I just think he's a really nice character. Good, very well worth a listen. His podcast last week on the F1 Spotify. I can't remember what it's called now. Beyond the Grid. That's the one.
Yes. Yeah.
He was unlucky not to win a race. If you think he's going in, if you're putting it, he's not above Hulk. I'm putting that straight out there. But yeah, Glock was always decent. Only really raced for Toyota. He debuted with Jordan.
Remind me again, how many podiums Timo Glock got?
Three.
Makes it quite easy then, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, I can't be bothered with this. He probably
put Grosjean in there.
He probably would have won the Malaysian race in 09 that got cut short. Because he was
probably
right.
Probably he's a bit strong.
Maybe not probably, but he could have. He had a chance.
Could have.
Yeah.
Which to me sounds like a potential race winner.
It does. Also came second in Hungary with Kovalainen winning, which we've mentioned already, and second in Singapore 09 as well. And yeah, he was, especially in a time when you had kind of the top six positions were all kind of locked in 08 and arguably 09 as well. Although that was
I wouldn't say so.
Yeah.
I wouldn't
but 08
say
was
so.
Like McLaren, Ferrari, BMW would have like just locked on top six most races. The fact he came 10th twice in a row in the championships, very respectable in 2008-2009 for Toyota.
Yeah, and they were in odd years for Toyota as well, of course. And then, sadly for Timo Glock, of course, just got shafted by the financial crash and obviously Toyota leaving.
Interestingly, he revealed on his podcast that end of 09 when Toyota were leaving, of course, he had basically an appointment with Renault to go and sign a contract after the final race of the season. And then on the night before, got a call from McLaren saying they were going to look at his chances too to replace Kovalainen. And he turned down that appointment with Renault to sign the contract to gamble on going to McLaren. And then because Vodafone came in and wanted two British drivers, they went with Button instead.
Well, I think McLaren wanted Button anyway, didn't they?
Yeah, it's true. Glock was probably the backup. But yeah, he would have been at Renault and that would have been a killer midfield team of Kubica and Glock.
Yeah.
That would have been top. But unfortunately for him, he kind of screwed himself by not going to Renault and risking McLaren and then ending up at Virgin/Marussia/Mata for the rest of his career in Formula One.
Yeah, a disappointing end for a driver with a lot of potential, wasn't it, Timo Glock? But he's gone on to do a lot of good things since then, hasn't he? In DTM, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he did a lot of DTM. He competed in a couple of races this season as well. He done a bit of Bathurst 12 Hours, which you obviously know a lot about this weekend.
No, that's the wrong Bathurst race. That's the Bathurst 1000.
Well, it's still the same
that
track,
I did this
isn't it?
Weekend. Same track, yeah, completely different
much
cars.
Much like you, Glock DNF'd in 2017. So, he actually...
What, in the Bathurst 12 Hours?
Well, in the Bathurst 12 hours in 2017. Yeah.
Fair enough.
He's formed a very good relationship apparently with Felipe Massa. So much so that he entered the stock car Brazil. And unfortunately didn't get to race because Massa was doing the first race of one weekend and then Glock was taken over for the second race of the weekend. And Massa crashed out and totaled the car. So Glock didn't get to do his race.
That's very much just a Felipe Massa. That's for 2008. Just throws it all on a wall or something. Yeah, I mean, Timo Glock, I think, is always one of those, isn't he? I mean, we could dedicate so many hours, like, down the line. Like, if say, for example, we ended up with, like, a second COVID, where, like, 6 months without Formula One, we could dedicate so many hours to, like, these lost midfielders, couldn't we? Sort of talking about their F1 careers.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Glock, I think, yeah, definitely, you know, like we said, was a potential race winner. You might have noticed, Jamie, I have brought Hülkenberg up into that category for you.
Oh, I didn't see
but
that.
But I am leaving Glock in front of him because he got podiums.
Fair enough. I can live with that.
Fair enough. Then we go, Jamie, to... I don't actually recognise this driver, to be honest.
Is he the driver who got beaten by Nico Rosberg in Equal Machinery?
I think he might have been. Lewis Hamilton? Hamilton?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. I don't know what
he's
doing.
Tell me, what happened to this kid?
Well, he managed to fluke his way into the best car in his first ever year and has still lost the title.
But he did beat his teammate, though, if I remember correctly.
He won on countback. Come on.
It's a win is a win, James.
Obviously, Lewis Hamilton, we don't need to do where is he now because we all know where he is. Losing to George Russell. Yeah. He's the best
driver on this list. He is, yeah. I mean, let's be fair, 7 world championships. Could still, I know I've brought it up a couple of times, could be 11.
If my grandmother had wheels, she'd have been a bike.
Exactly. But the fact he's gone into 11 championship deciders is madness.
Yeah.
You know, one of the greatest of all time, you know, certainly top three ever in Formula One. I think there's no arguing against that. Almost, of course, ended up at Williams, is often forgotten.
I didn't know
that. So end of 2005, Hamilton and his dad wanted him to make the move up to Formula One. They felt he was ready. Of course, Rosberg was slightly older, if I remember, and of course had won GP2 that year. But McLaren wanted him to do another year of GP2. Hamilton and his dad, well, his dad apparently, from what I gather, wasn't particularly happy with that. So they almost signed a deal with Williams to push him into Formula One for 06. And that would have been the end of... No, instead of Rosberg, if I remember correctly.
That is interesting. And that would have been a completely different career. He'd have been like Rosberg instead, basically.
Rosberg could have ended up at McLaren in 07,
imagine they had like reversed careers. That would have been so weird.
That would have been bizarre, wouldn't it? Although it wouldn't have changed much in the grand scheme of things if it was just completely reversed, because of course they would have just ended up back together in 2013 anyway.
Yeah.
It would just be Rosberg might have had a world championship.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of which, though, Nico Rosberg.
The GOAT. Six years
beat Hamilton
yesterday that he won the Singapore Grand Prix in 2016, which kind of almost confirmed his championship, in my opinion, because he was top level that weekend and all season he was just on this top of his game.
Was he though? Was he, Jamie, all season? I'm thinking of a certain Monaco Grand Prix.
Oh yeah, well, yeah, we don't talk about Monaco.
Say, when he's not deliberately crashing. Oh, I've just realised I'm having a look on 2016 season.
The tier list went away for a second.
I apologise.
Yeah, but I mean, we're not here to talk about how he deserved 2016 because Matt's going to argue with me for that. But he's got to be in different gravy. World champion in Formula One. Called it quits. Still lives in the head of Lewis Hamilton rent free. And he's a good YouTuber. So there we go. If he's listening, we'll have you on the podcast.
We will, Nico, if you are listening, we will have you on the show. Different gravy, I feel, is optimistic.
Oh, come on. He won a world championship.
No, this isn't me trying to slander. Don't get me wrong. This isn't, but genuinely, I think we've also got to remember, of course, that 2016 campaign, absolutely that year, he was on it. It was the best year he ever had in Formula One. No questions asked. You also cannot argue that it was one of Hamilton's worst years in Formula One. Obviously, his worst Mercedes year of all time, I would suggest. And Rosberg still only won that campaign by 5 points. I would put him, honestly, and this isn't just me trying to like get under your skin or anything, I would put him as top championship threat, which he absolutely was. But different gravy is for those that could be multiple world champions, which I really don't honestly believe you can argue. Had Rosberg won 2016 and decided to stay, when Ferrari were a threat in 2017, I can't help but feel he would have been slightly, not badly, but slightly left behind between Lewis and Seb.
I think the first half of 17, Lewis was off his game still.
Ferrari had a very good car, and Mercedes weren't really used to having to battle other cars for championships.
No. But after Silverstone, I think it was, Bottas was like 15 points behind Hamilton.
Bottas also had a very, very good start to 2017. No.
He did, but you can't say that Rosberg would have done worse than Bottas, I don't think.
No, I wouldn't say he would have done worse than Bottas.
I feel very hard done by if he's not in different gravy.
But he's not. He's only a one-time Formula 1 world champion.
He's beaten two seven-time world champions.
One of them was a pensioner, and one of them had the worst year of his Mercedes career.
Yeah, and whose fault was that? His own?
Some of it, yes. But Rosberg got destroyed in 2015.
He wasn't destroyed. His rivalry was shocking.
He was behind Sebastian Vettel by the US Grand Prix.
Yeah, and he's had like three DNFs from a one or two position that year.
Hamilton got robbed in 2016.
He can go in championship threat if you want. But I'm nailing my colours to the mast, and he would be a different.
I'm sure you are, but you cannot honestly suggest Rosberg is a generational talent like Hamilton, Russell, and Leclerc. You just can't.
I would take Rosberg.
You can't, Jamie. You can't. No, Jamie, I'm sorry. You can't honestly suggest Rosberg is a generational talent.
Let us know. Rosberg and Hülkenberg, my boys, are getting absolutely slandered this video.
You're lucky I put Hülkenberg up as a potential race winner when we all know we're throwing it away. I'm not having Rosberg in different gravy. I'm not allowing it. Let's go on then to our wild and wacky final driver of the list. It's the GP2 Asia champion, Kamui Kobayashi.
Yes, and he was just like a cult hero in F1.
He was.
There was a time, utterly I think it was bizarre. Last year, or maybe earlier this year, where it was just earlier mental, this year, the amount of videos that Kamui Kobayashi just got loads of recommended videos in everyone's subboxes of him doing anything.
And completely deserved, because he made F1 incredibly... Like, you had this, like we said, obviously, this bizarre era in Formula 1. You had Grosjean and Maldonado making it interesting because you never know what they might do. You had Kobayashi making it interesting for what he was going to do.
Yeah.
He was bizarre, and we loved it.
Yeah, and he always, like... He just... In a time where you couldn't overtake in F1, effectively, he just...
He made it look easy.
Anyway. He was quality at that. He was never that fast over the course of a race or one lap, but he was just always exciting to watch. It was like, what's Kobayashi going to do next?
Yeah, and the fact that he even was able to survive in Formula 1 was bizarre. Of course, you know, like we mentioned, won GP2 Asia, but GP2, he was awful.
Yeah, yeah.
I made a video about this a few months ago, and obviously Kamui Kobayashi's GP2 career was, and obviously the fact he then came into Formula 1 at the back end of 2009 and obviously beat Button in his second Grand Prix, that was the equivalent nowadays of Roy Nassani. He overtook him though.
He overtook Button, yeah.
He overtook Button. That would be the equivalent now of Roy Nassani getting an F1 gig next in Singapore and overtaking Max Verstappen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. He came 16th in 08 and 09 in Euro 09, GP2. Yeah. And yeah, debuted with Toyota, got a point in his second race, and then just, yeah, drove for Sauber for 3 years. Was quite unlucky to not have a seat for 2013. Came 12th every year for Sauber, interestingly. Got a podium in Japan, his home race. Unfortunately, ended up at Caterham for 2014. Actually, could have like, one thing I think people forget, in the first race of the season, if he hadn't...
Could have scored points.
Yeah, he could have scored points if he hadn't have ruined Felipe Massa.
He re-rounded Massa in turn one, didn't he?
Yeah, he qualified 15th in a Caterham.
But and... there were only 18 cars that weekend, weren't there?
No, there were 22.
In 2015?
2014. He didn't race 2015.
Oh, yes. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, no, it was 2015 Manor weren't there, wasn't it? Sorry.
Yeah, 2015 Manor just didn't arrive. But yeah, Kobayashi was always decent, always exciting, well worth a watch. And I think top end a decent midfielder, maybe below Van Dorn.
Jamie, don't try to break the logic.
You're not just putting... He was never close to winning a race.
He was a podium winner, and given the right car, I don't see any reason why he was any worse than any of those other potential race winners.
True, to be fair. He was on a level with Grosjean and Maldonado, for sure.
There we go, then we'll put him between.
Okay, whatever.
Simple as that. I mean, I was going to ask you whether we think anyone needs moving here, but
I mean, I do.
Not. We are not having this conversation. No.
Let's just enjoy that argument.
As ruler of the tier list, I am dictating this result now. It's staying as it is. I think we've done pretty well there, though. I think, for the most part, like, the order is pretty bang on.
Yeah, apart from Rosberg.
No.
Yeah.
No, because he's not on the same level as those three. I'm sorry, he's just not.
Okay. Let us know what changes you would make. I think we all know what I would make, but that's not important anymore.
Hence why we don't let Jamie control the tier list. You.
Yeah.
Yeah, well. But, yeah, thank you all, I guess, so much for listening / watching nonetheless. You know, if you did enjoy something a little bit different, we would highly recommend you get yourself subscribed because, you know, over the winter break, I think we've got a 4-month winter break this year, don't we, Jamie? Abu Dhabi's in November, so we're definitely going to do more sort of fun little videos like this where we just go through and rant about past Formula One and look back over the history of recent years as well. But yeah, make sure you get yourself subscribed as well for more Formula One based content, and we will return next week, hopefully with some actual F1 news, but certainly more Knowing Wheel.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.